Now we come to one of the first miracles in Luke's gospel that is recorded in all three synoptic gospels. The first three gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are called synoptic gospels, which means it's a compound word. It means to see together. So what Matthew, Mark, and Luke write about are the same events, but each writer writes with sort of a different spin because they're writing to a different audience, but they are describing the exact same miracles that the other two write about, but they have sort of a different spin or a different take on it. So this is one of those unique miracles that the first three Gospels all record. Matthew records it in chapter 8, verses 1 through 4. Mark chapter 1, verses 40 through 45. And of course, we're looking here at Luke chapter 5, verses 12 through 16. Now, this miracle really stands out because the last recorded cleansing of leprosy was 852 BC, or 900 years earlier. So the last recorded cleansing of leprosy had been 900 years since Israel has heard of such a cleansing. And that cleansing was Elisha when he was used by the Lord to heal Naaman, who is a commander of the Syrian army in 2 Kings chapter 5. Well, the condition of this particular leper is extreme. I call attention to verse 12. Notice what Dr. Luke says. He says, a man covered with leprosy, or literally a man full of leprosy. Notice it also says in one of the cities. Now that's interesting because in the final days of a leper, they were allowed back into the city. Their final hours, their final days, they were allowed to come back into the city. They had to live outside the city, but in the final hours and days, they were permitted to come back into the city. So here is a man that is full of leprosy, that is in the final stage of having this leprosy. He's at death's door. And he comes to Jesus in desperation. He comes begging Jesus. He comes in humility. He comes in faith. And he says, Jesus, if you are willing, you can cleanse me. And in verse 13, Jesus responds, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately the leprosy left him. Of course, you know, you kind of look at this miracle and you got to ask yourself the question, why did Jesus perform miracles? And let me suggest three reasons why Jesus is performing miracles. First of all, number one, Jesus wanted to meet human need. Jesus loves people. And the Bible is very clear. God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. Mark 1:41 regarding this miracle adds these words, and moved with compassion, or literally gut-wrenched. Have you ever seen something that has got your attention, that you're so touched by it, you lose your appetite? That's what happened to Jesus. When Jesus saw this man and the way that this man came to Jesus, Jesus was gut-wrenched over this man's condition. The second reason that Jesus performed miracles were additional credentials to prove that Jesus was the Son of God and the Son of Man. The miracles fulfilled the point that Jesus was the coming Messiah. In Isaiah chapter 29 and Isaiah 35 noted that when the Messiah would come, he would cleanse the lepers of their leprosy. So that is important to us. Later on in Luke chapter 7, verse 22, when John the Baptist was imprisoned and John became rather disillusioned as he was sitting in prison, and he says, are you the Messiah? Are you the coming one? And Jesus says, go back to John and tell John that the lepers are cleansed of leprosy. So it was a sign that he was the Son of God, he was the Son of Man, but also thirdly, the miracles were sermons in action. They were literally living parables is what they were. So God would do a miraculous work to teach us about sin. He would teach us about the damage of sin and what sin would do. And he would show through the miracle of what God could do, how only God himself can cleanse us. Only God can make those lame feet walk again. Only God can do it. It's a miraculous work of God. So here is a man that has been chosen by God to exemplify desperation. Here's a man that's in the final stages of leprosy. He probably, if he was married, hasn't touched his wife in probably 9 years, hasn't touched his children, hasn't seen his close friends. A man that is no longer has an occupation. A man that's depending upon the handouts of others to survive. The only associations he has is with other lepers. So here's a man now in the final stages that comes to Jesus Christ, asking that Jesus would heal him, that Jesus would touch him. Now, this section we're looking at begins in Luke chapter 4, verse 14, and extends all the way to Luke 9, verse 50, or to the end of chapter 9 of Luke's gospel. Now, this section that we're looking at this morning is entitled The Ministry of the Son of Man. This entire fifth chapter has the theme of the Lord dealing with people. And it's all about relationships. It's all about Jesus' encounter with people. The first encounter was Jesus with Peter and three of the disciples. This morning is an encounter with a man with leprosy. Next week, it will be an encounter with a paralytic. Then it will be an encounter with Matthew, the tax collector. Then it'll be an encounter with the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So an entire chapter in which God is having encounters with people. And they're never the same after having an encounter with Jesus. Their lives were changed. So the theme of Luke's gospel is Jesus Christ, the perfect man. This gospel was written to Greeks by a Gentile named Luke. The Greeks were obsessed with humanity, and Luke is saying, don't look for the perfect man. I've already found him. His name is Jesus, the Son of God, the Son of Man. Luke's purpose of writing the gospel is knowing the exact truth about Jesus. Luke 1:4 is the key verse of the gospel and tells us God's very purpose. Now, here's the thought of our passage. We always like to take our passage and attempt to boil it down to a single sentence. And sometimes that can really be a challenge to do that. But this morning, here's the thought of our passage. A desperate man appealing to Jesus in faith and humility is touched by God. I think that pretty encapsulates the thought of this passage this morning. That this man appealed to Jesus, he came in faith and humility and faith, and Jesus touched him. Here's how I want to break it down this morning. In verse 12, we have the need. We're going to look at this desperate, desperate man who comes to Jesus, who comes begging Jesus. Then in verse 13, we have the touch of God upon this man. And then in verses 14 through 16, we have the directive. We have Jesus giving a directive. Again, Saturday night, Sunday morning, you know, you can go to ccrialto.com and you can download the notes. You can get a PDF page there and you can just print them out on your printer. You know, if you got the app right now, you can turn to Sunday morning. There's 4.5 pages of notes there. We're going to put those pages up on the screen this morning as you follow along. I think it's a great way to print them out. Bring your Bible, bring a pen, you know, and you can do it. If you only come with a Bible and you don't come with a pen and notes or a notebook, you're like half saved. You need to get fully saved and get a notebook, okay? I'm sorry. And we'll have an altar call for notebooks after the service, you know. But I'm kidding, but in a sense, I'm serious about this. We need to take notes. This is serious stuff. When God speaks to us, we want to write it down. The older you get, there's a hardening of the hard drive. You know what I'm talking about? You know, you have to write yourself a note to go home after work, right? You don't remember to go home. You know, so, we need to write this stuff down. So, let's pick it up here in verse 12, and let's look at the need. It says, while he was in one of the cities. Well, the context of this is Jesus just left off doing a miracle called the miraculous catch. And it was in the first 11 verses of chapter 5 where the disciples had fished all night long, had not caught anything. Jesus was sitting in one of their boats and was teaching. And when he got done teaching, he says, let's go back out and let's let the nets down into the deep. And the disciples are going, okay, this isn't going to work, but you're asking us to do it. We'll do it. You ought to stick to preaching. We'll stick to fishing. But they said, okay, we'll do it. And so they went out, and when they did what Jesus told them to do, they caught such a large amount of fish, their nets began to break. And then when they started transferring the fish into the boats began to sink. And all of that was a parable to call these men to catch men for Jesus. He was calling them into the ministry to serve God. He was saying, you know, you're not going to catch fish and let them die and then eat them. You're going to catch men alive. You are going to be used by God to catch men. It's going to be supernatural, as it was supernatural that you caught these fish. So that's where we left off. That was what we just looked at in the first 11 verses. But it says, while he was in one of the cities. Now, all three Gospels, when you read them, they don't tell us the name of the city. So we're kind of hard-pressed to say, well, it was Capernaum, you know, it was Bethsaida, you know, that's where it was. We don't know. We don't know what the city is, because really here, God is not so concerned about the place, he's more concerned about the person. And it's this particular leper that he gives the description to. But Matthew does give us the context of this particular event. In Matthew 8:1, Matthew says these words, and when he had come down from the mountain. The context of that is Matthew 5, 6, and 7 is called the Sermon on the Mount. So as Jesus leaves this mountain, this hillside, and he comes back down, he comes into a city, and it's in the city that Jesus now has this encounter with a man that has leprosy. Now, Dr. Luke adds these words, there was a man covered with leprosy. Another way of saying that is this man was full of leprosy. Now, the very fact that this man met Jesus in the city gives us further details. It tells us he's in the last days of his life. Because lepers were to be outside the city. They're outside of the city limits is where lepers would live. They live in these colonies with other lepers outside the city limits. But the law allowed lepers to come back into the city when they were in the last stage of leprosy. So here's a man, the last stage of leprosy. We know because he's in the city, and we know because Dr. Luke said he was full of leprosy. Now, I'm going to take some time this morning, and I really want to describe leprosy to you, and there's a reason behind this morning, because we're talking about something much deeper than leprosy, and as some of you may already know. And so I'm going to take time to describe leprosy, because as I describe it, as you're about to see, I'm going to be describing sin to you, is what I'm going to be describing. So I'm going to spend a lot of time describing it. We're going to talk medically about it. We're going to relate it and so forth. So kind of bear with me as I do this. Now, I was kind of tempted this week to actually show some pictures of it, but after looking at the pictures, I decided not to do it, okay? I have been to India. I've seen firsthand people with leprosy. It is nasty. And some of you would probably never forgive me had I put pictures up. I mean, they're just, you get a picture in your mind, you never get rid of it. And it is, there's no other word, it's grotesque. It's the, and being there, the smell is unbelievable. So I'm not going to do that, but I am going to describe it this morning. Now, there are approximately 180,000 people on this planet that have been diagnosed as having leprosy. According to the World Health Organization, most of those that have contracted leprosy are in Africa and Asia. The most likely persons to come down with leprosy are children, which is interesting. Every year in the United States, there are approximately 100 people that are diagnosed in the U.S. with leprosy. Most of these are in the South. There's a good portion here in California, and there are some in Hawaii and then some other areas in the U.S. Now, leprosy today is sometimes not referred to as leprosy. It's called Hansen's disease, is what the technical term for leprosy is. It's named Hansen's disease after a doctor by the name of Hansen that did extensive research regarding leprosy. There was a missionary slash doctor named Paul Brand who was the one that discovered that the disfigurement associated with Hansen's disease comes solely because of the body's warning system of pain is destroyed. A person gets burned, they grip something too hard, they traumatize their hand. They can have their hand literally in the fire and they won't even know it. Sometimes a person will grab something, they don't realize how hard they're grabbing. They can destroy their bones, their tendons, everything by simply grabbing because they literally can't feel what their body is going through. Some called it a painless hell, they called it. It approximately takes its course in 9 years. Dr. Paul Bram, who does corrective surgeries in third world countries, when he would diagnose a person with leprosy, he would send the person home with a cat, and the person that had leprosy, the cat would stop the rats from eating their flesh. And you find this in third world countries. People will go to sleep and rats will start biting them. And if you had leprosy, you wouldn't even know that a rat is eating you. So he would send home a cat to protect them. Now, there are three types of leprosy or three types of Hansen's disease. The first one is called nodular or tubercular leprosy. It starts usually on the face and then spreads to the entire body. It starts as a little pink nodules, and they eventually turn brown and then begin to ooze this putrefying odor. This particular disease, from the point of diagnosing it until you die, is about 9 years. The second is called anesthetic leprosy, or called progressive death. It affects the nerve ending so that it takes away the sensation of pain. A person can be badly burned or cut without knowing it. The skin is literally worn off so that one day you would have a hand or a foot that would fall off. Now, I have seen this type of leprosy, and it is just heartbreaking. You see the person, they're just this hunk of flesh with no arms or legs. They're just gone. And you see their face that is so disfigured, and it's just with these nodules, it's just unreal. The third one is called leprosy proper, which is a mixture of the last two. Now, let me read this description to you by William Barclay. William Barclay says, "The whole appearance of the face is changed till the man loses his human appearance and looks, as the ancients said, like a lion. The nodules grow larger and larger and they ulcerate. From them, there comes this foul discharge. The eyebrows fall out. The eyes become staring, the voice becomes hoarse, and the victim wheezes because of the ulceration of the vocal cords. The hands and the feet always ulcerate. Slowly, the sufferer becomes a mass of ulcerated growths. The average course of the disease is 9 years, and it ends in mental decay, coma, and ultimately death. The sufferer becomes utterly repulsive, both to himself and to others." Now, let me just say this at this juncture, that the Old Testament alluded to the fact that leprosy was being more than a disease. If you jot down Leviticus 13 and 14 and you start to read through the description and the cleansing of leprosy, you'll begin to see it's much more than skin. There is something much deeper that is being described here than simply a physical ailment. As bad as this is, it's much deeper than that. Leviticus 13:3 says it's deeper than skin. And we all know that sin is deeper than skin. I mean, a person that's a drunkard, they may think they can solve their problem by going to AA, but you know what? You can clean up your act and stop drinking and you'll still go to hell. A person can be an angry person that that beats up their spousal abuse. And they can go and take anger management. And that's a wonderful thing, to quit beating up and striking your spouse. But anger management doesn't bring you into heaven. You're just dealing with skin is all you're dealing with. You're dealing with the outside. And leprosy is much deeper than that because it's sin. It starts as a little white spot and then spreads, Leviticus 13, verses 5 through 8. There's no such thing as a little white lie either. Starts out small and then begins to consume. It defiles and separates, Leviticus 13, verses 44 through 46. Of course, sin separates us from God and separates us from one another. It is fit only for the fire, Leviticus 13, verses 47 through 59. And of course, we recognize also in Numbers 12, 12, that a person that doesn't put their faith in Jesus, that is separated from God because they don't have the new birth, they're not born again, they will be separated in what we call the lake of fire. It's Revelation 20. Josephus, who was a Jewish historian, went on to say they were in effect dead men or dead men walking, is what Josephus referred to them as. Now, what's the ramifications of this? Well, religiously, if you had leprosy, you could never go to the temple and present an offering. You could never go to a local synagogue. You could never worship with God's people ever again, because your leprosy banned you from God's people. It banned you from having a relationship with God. Again, leprosy was used by Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 1, verses 4 through 6. Isaiah used leprosy as a picture of sin. Now, as bad as this is, the rabbis took this to a whole different level during Jesus' day. Rabbis taught a leper who put his head into someone's house, they thus made that house unclean. A person with leprosy, it was illegal to greet a leper. It was wrong to say, may peace be with you, or shalom, to a leper. They said it was wrong to do that. Can you imagine that? Not greeting a person because they have a disease. A leper had to remain at least 100 cubits away upwind. Now, a cubit's 18 to 22 inches away, and 4 cubits downwind. When they walked a road, they walked the shoulder. They were not permitted to walk in the center of a road. They had to walk on the edges of the road. Socially, they were separated. If they were married, they were no longer married. They were no longer with their spouse, no longer with their children, no longer with their friends. They were banished from all the relationships they once had. The only relationships that they had now was with those that were in common that had leprosy too. So they're separate. You can imagine a person that has never hugged his wife in 9 years, never seen their children, their grandchildren, never see their best friend. They are absolutely separated from them. Leviticus 13:45 says, as for the leper who has the infection, his clothes shall be torn, the hair of his head shall be uncovered, and he shall cover his mustache and cry, unclean, unclean. And he shall remain unclean all the days during which he has the infection. He is unclean, he shall live alone, his dwelling shall be outside the camp. The rabbis were brutal. Matter of fact, one rabbi used to brag that he threw rocks at lepers. That's what they did. Economically, it was a disaster because you couldn't hold the job down. You couldn't work. So you're absolutely dependent upon the generosity of others. Your spouse couldn't bring you a meal. Children couldn't bring you something to eat. So what they had was these dropping points where they would have a place that people could drop food off. And then after the people left, the lepers could then come in and forage through what was left over, the chimichangas and the taquitos and all the rest of the stuff that was left behind. That was it. It was just basic charity was their survival. Physically, the outlook was a slow, lonely death. Leprosy came with a burning fever, sleeplessness, constant nightmares, and eating alone. It was literally eating your bones away, minute by minute. Mentally, persons would literally go mad. They were in isolation, never around their friends or their loved ones, only those that had leper that were in the same position they were in. Now, we hear all of this right now, and we're going, okay, well, this is great. Next time I know someone with leprosy, I'll be able to share some of these things with them. Well, it's a little deeper than that. Leprosy is a description of sin. And as I was looking at this and describing it to you, some of you were picking up on this. Did you notice something else about our passage? Did you know it never says that leprosy is healed? Leprosy is always cleansed. Because leprosy is a picture of sin. Only God Himself can cleanse us of our sins. It isn't something that we can take a pill and we can go through a physical treatment in order to deal with sin. Sin is not healed, it is cleansed. And the very laws that condemn leprosy lack the ability to remove it, as the law could not remove sin from the sinner. Listen to this, Romans 8:3. For what the law could not do, weak as it was through the flesh, God did, sending His own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh, and an offering for sin, He condemned sin in the flesh. It was R.C. Trench, who's the editor of the Oxford English Bible, says, the leopard was not worse or guiltier than his fellow countrymen. He was nevertheless a parable of sin. He was an outward visible sign of innermost spiritual corruption. And this man was on the doorstep of death, spiritually and physically speaking. Here's a man that is separated from God, separated from man, that is at death's doors. But what I want to talk to you about at this point is the four things that are notable about this man's approach to Jesus. And I want to call attention to four things that this man did as he came to Jesus. And I believe that his approach is the approach that you and I can take every single day. I would write these four things down because they're helpful in the way that we approach the Lord, the way that we direct our prayers to the Lord, not directing God, but directing our prayers to God. The first thing I want to note about this man, this leopard or this sinner, he came in desperation. There was a man covered with leprosy, and when he saw Jesus, Mark 1:40 says, a leopard came to him. Luke, being a physician, a doctor, said he was covered or he was full of leprosy. So what it tells us is this disease has run its course. It's about ready to claim this body. There isn't too much more this poor body's going to take. He's been beat up by this thing for probably 9 years. Pretty close. That's the average. He's now in the city that tells us he's in the final stage, the last days of his life. But this man recognized his condition. He recognized that he was in a desperate state. So what does he do in his desperation? He comes to Jesus. That's what he does. John 6:37 says, all that the Father gives me shall come to me, and the one who comes to me I will certainly not cast out. I love what Jesus had said maybe minutes before this in the Sermon on the Mount. In that sermon that Jesus has just preached, and then he came into this community, it tells us in Matthew 5:3, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Let me ask you, do you recognize how desperate you really are? You know, if you have not put your faith in Jesus Christ, you are at death's door. If you die in the condition that you're in right now without putting your faith in Jesus, you will be separated from God for all of eternity. That's what the Bible teaches. In order to go to hell, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to do a thing to go to hell. You just keep living your life apart from God. But if you desire to make a change, if you'll acknowledge your desperate condition, that you have spiritual leprosy, that you are a sinner and you are in desperate need of God, you could come to God. You can put your faith in Him. Notice the second thing about this man's approach. The leopard or the sinner came in humility. He fell on his face. This is the act of expressing reverence and honor. This man comes in humility. He's not bragging. He's not bargaining. He doesn't have a proposal. He doesn't say, let's make a deal. He doesn't do any of that. He realizes who Jesus is. And he's coming in all humility. He's coming in all brokenness. Psalm 51:17 says, the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit and a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. You know, men will not be lost because they are bad, but because they're proud. That's the reason people are lost. That's the reason why people continue to be lost. It's not because they're the worst sinners in the IE or Rialto or Fontana. That's not the reason they go to hell. They go to hell because they're prideful. They won't come in humility to God. They won't humble themselves before God. 1 Peter 5:5 says, you younger men, likewise, be subject to your own elders, and all of you clothe yourselves with humility towards one another, for God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. The only one that can help us is God. The only one that can cleanse this man is God. And what's so sad is the only one that can cleanse us, the only one that can help us in our hour of need, we reject. We curse, we blame, we're angry at, got an attitude about the very one that can help us. But boy, this man sure was different. He could be bitter over the fact that he had leprosy. He could be walking around every minute saying, why me, why me, why me? Stupid parents I had passed this on to me. My dad had, now I have it. Wow, thank you. You met people like that? They're just bitter. Just bitter people. This man came in humility. He was a broken man. I tell you, over these last, well, tonight will be 8 weeks, we've been having enjoying marriage. And we had like 52 couples, and we've been going through enjoying marriage. I got to tell you, I have been so blessed these last 8 weeks. I have had the privilege of talking with couples and hearing some of the things that God has done over these last 8 weeks. And let me tell you what the key ingredient's been to changing these marriages is humility. There are husbands that have humbled themselves. There are wives that have humbled themselves. There are couples that in desperation have come to the Lord. And I am watching couples that have literally had their marriages transformed over these last 8 weeks. It has been just absolutely remarkable. And let me just say this morning, it's the same with us. We need to humble ourselves. Humble ourselves in our marriage. Humble ourselves before God. Humble ourselves in our family. Humble ourselves on our job. Humble ourselves in our neighborhoods. We need to humble ourselves before God. We need to fall on our faces. God, be merciful to me, the sinner. Humble ourselves before the Lord. Number three, this leopard or sinner came to Jesus begging. He's begging. Some people say, I'm too proud to beg. Oh, not this man. He implored him, or literally to call near, or to invite, to invoke, to call for, to desire, to treat, to pray. So here's a man that was aware of his condition, and he came to Jesus begging. He's realizing his only hope is the mercy of God. That's my hope. My hope of my marriage, the hope of my family, the hope of my relationship with God. This man came begging. A man in the last stages of leprosy. Romans 10:9 says that if you confess with your mouth Jesus as Lord, believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you shall be saved. For with the heart man believes, resulting in righteousness, and with the mouth he confesses, resulting in salvation. Let me ask this question. Do you see yourself as a leper? Do you see yourself as incurably sick by sin? That your only hope is a cleansing from Jesus And this man begged Jesus for that cleansing. And then number four, the leper, the sinner, came to Jesus in faith. Notice saying, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. So he's aware of his sin. He's aware of his condition. He doesn't doubt that Jesus can do it, but he doesn't know if Jesus is willing to do it. So he has the faith that Jesus can cleanse him. That's not really an issue. But his thinking is, I wonder if you desire to. I wonder if you really want to. Notice what he calls Jesus Lord. That's equivalent to God. It means supreme in authority. It means controller or master. It's actually a sacred term for God is what it is. He's calling him the controller, God, the commander is what he says. He says, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. So he doesn't question the ability of Jesus, but the willingness of Jesus is what he does. Notice that this is a prayer that is to be directed at God, not directing God. And I want you to notice the difference between the two. I would suggest to you that the word faith, which I think is just an incredible heresy, and I don't even like to call it in mainline Christianity because I really question whether some of these people are even saved because of their positions that they hold, but they teach that every person that prays, every person that comes with faith is always healed. The only reason a person is not healed is because they don't have enough faith. Or maybe they have hidden sin in their life. And I would suggest to you that their prayers are directing God. They're not directed at God, they're directing God. But I'll tell you, if you read the New Testament, just a quick read through the New Testament would show that it doesn't work that way. There are times that God did not heal. And it was called the will of God. I think of the instance of Lazarus in John 11, where the Lord said that the sickness and then the death was for God's glory. God allowed Lazarus to get sick and then even to die, and he had been in the grave for several days until Jesus got there. And Jesus called it God's will. It was so that God could be honored and glorified. In John 9, there was a man that was born blind from birth. And God says the whole purpose behind the blindness for all of these years is so that the works of God could be manifest, they could be seen. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, we got Paul, who had a thorn in the flesh, who prayed three times that God would set him free. And God says, no, my grace is sufficient for you. Power is perfected in weakness. Now, what's the point of all this? Listen, God's the sovereign one. We're not. God determines who he wants to heal and who he chooses not to heal. God is the one who ultimately chooses who he exalts and who he abases. That's God's decision. It's not mine. It's not yours. We can beg God. We can come to God in faith. We can come in humility. We can come in desperation. And we can fall at the feet of God seeking his mercy. And God can work. God can choose to work. But God's not bound to. God wasn't bound to, but God chose to do so. This man came God's way. He came in humility before God. And this brings us now to verse 13, is the touch. This is an amazing scene. And he, Jesus, stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately the leprosy left him. Now, Mark 1:41 adds this, that the other gospels don't. And moved with compassion, or literally gripped with compassion, or to be gut-wrenched with compassion. It's describing an emotional response of Jesus to this man's condition, this man's leprosy, and this man's approach to Jesus. Again, you know, you've seen something that is just, it just so unraveling that all of a sudden you say, I don't want to eat. Well, that's what happened here with Jesus. Jesus was gut-wrenched when he looked at this man, and as he looked at his approach to Jesus, Jesus was literally gut-wrenched. He felt it in his gut, his compassion and his love and his desire for this man. And the Bible says he stretched out his hand and touched him. Now, our English versions don't bring this out, but it literally means to take hold of. So Jesus didn't reach over to this leprous man and just touch him. Jesus reached over and grabbed him. Maybe grabbed his forearm or his shoulder or put his hand on his shoulder. And he touched him. Now, this is amazing because this goes against the Mosaic law, doesn't it? This man's not to be in contact with another person, but Jesus is the one that touched him. Many believe, and I think it's possible, that before Jesus even touched him, he was already cleansed. Jesus decided at that moment, I'm cleansing you, and you're cleansed, and he reaches over and touches him. I love this in 2 Corinthians 5:21. He made him who knew no sin to be sin on our behalf that we might become the righteousness of God in him. You see, the touch of Jesus says no person is an untouchable when it comes to God. You know, there's not a person in here that Jesus can't touch. There's not a person in here that Jesus does not want to touch. He wants to touch every one of us. We're the ones that make ourselves untouchable. We're the ones that prevent God from touching us. But this man willingly came to the Lord. Don't think this morning that God doesn't love you. Don't think this morning that you're beyond the touch of God because you've done this, you've done that, you've thought that, you've been living this way for all of your life. There's no way. Listen, God will touch you. But are you willing for the Lord to touch you? Will you come to God on his terms, not your terms? There's no deal making here. We come to God out of desperation. We come to God begging. We come out of humility. We come in faith. Notice spiritually what happened. I am willing, be cleansed. Not healed, be cleansed. And I believe at this moment, this man received salvation. This man recognized who Jesus was. He was God. He was the commander. He was the one of authority. I think in a sense, we should be responding the same way Jesus is. We should touch those that no one else will touch. Maybe this man hasn't physically been touched in 9 years. Hasn't been touched by his wife. It's because no one. And this man was touched by Jesus. And Jesus, we can do that. We can be extensions of Jesus. We can touch those that no one else will touch. But notice physically, and immediately the leprosy left him. So his cleansing wasn't in stages, it wasn't in steps, it was instantaneously this man was cleansed. 1 John 1:7, but if we walk in the light as he himself is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his son, cleanses us from all sin. So when we walk with Jesus Christ, daily we are cleansed through that relationship and fellowship with Jesus daily. Well, this man entered into that relationship and he was cleansed. This brings us now to our third and final point. Verses 14 through 16 is the directive. And verse 14 says, and he ordered him to tell no one. Now, Mark 1:43 says, he sternly warned him. Or literally, he got in his face and he commanded him. So Jesus got in this man's face and says, listen, I don't want you to go out and tell the world. I don't want you to be a blabbermouth. I don't want you to do that. That's not what I want you to do. Now, why is this? Well, let me suggest some reasons. First of all, Jesus did not want lines of people coming to him merely for physical healing. It was much more than that. He was doing the miracles to call attention to his message. So he didn't want people just looking at him as the miracle worker. Secondly, crowds of people wanting physical needs met would hinder Jesus from meeting the spiritual needs, his preaching and his teaching. And thirdly, meeting merely the physical needs fueled the fire that Jesus' kingdom was of this world. Jesus said over and over again, my kingdom's not of this world. But the very fact this guy was broadcasting, people think, all right, this is the Messiah. He's setting up his kingdom. His kingdom is of this world. And Jesus said his kingdom was not of this world. But Jesus instructed him, but go and show yourself to the priest. So there were two people in the Old Testament that had been cleansed of leprosy. Miriam, who was, of course, the sister of Moses, and then Naaman. And also Isaiah 29 and Isaiah 35 all made it clear that when the Messiah would come, he would cleanse the leper. So this was Jesus' way of saying the Messiah is on scene. Yes, Messiah has come. And he says, and make an offering for your cleansing just as Moses commanded. Now this is Leviticus chapter 14, verses 1 through 32. We don't have time to read 32 verses. We're not going to do that. But let me just give a synopsis of what took place. This is amazing what happened. They would take two birds. They would slaughter one of the birds. They would put him in a clay pot. And they would set one of the birds free. That is a picture of the resurrection. Jesus was slaughtered. He bled and died for our sins. He was placed in the ground, and he was resurrected on the third day. Along with that, after that was done, they anointed the ear, the hand, and the foot. Now think about the significance of this. The ear was anointed with oil that we might hear him. The hand was anointed that we might serve him. And the feet were anointed that we might walk with him. So after the new birth and after the resurrection life, we hear him, we serve him, and we walk with him. It's a beautiful picture of what Jesus Christ would do for the sinner that was cleansed of their sins. And he says, as a testimony to them, it was unheard of. Been 900 years since these events had taken place. It was unheard of what was being described here. And look at verse 15. But the news about him was spreading even further, and large crowds were gathering to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. So this man's enthusiasm overshadowed his memory. His excitement gave way to indiscretion. But you know, a true gratitude is expressed in doing what God commands. I can look at what this man did, and I'm saying, God help me, that I probably would have done the same thing. I mean, how could I not tell others that God has cleansed me after 9 years of being at death's door? It would be so hard not to testify for the Lord and give testimony for Jesus Christ. But that zeal lacked the wisdom of God. Listen to what Mark says in Mark 1:45. But he went out and began proclaiming it freely and to spread the news around to such an extent that Jesus could no longer publicly enter a city, but stayed out in the unpopulated areas, and they were coming to him from everywhere. You see, some have good motives for disobeying God's commands, but it will always result in hindering God's plan. If God tells us to zip the lips, we need to zip the lips. That Christians over the years justify gossip and everything else. Well, you know, it's a prayer request. I've seen them do this stuff. They always hinder the work of God. They always hurt people. And if God tells us to be quiet about something, if God reveals something to us and he says, just zip your lips, then we need to do so. If we think we're going to help God, all we're going to do is hinder God's plan. And that's what this man did. He's like a well-intentioned dragon is what he was. And it says, and large crowds were gathering to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. But look at verse 16. This just goes with the directive. But Jesus himself would often slip away to the wilderness and pray. Now, Luke records again and again that Jesus was a man of prayer. He went away for all-night prayer vigils. Jesus was always in prayer. And you know, prayer is an acknowledgement of our dependence on God for life and ministry. Do you know that prayerlessness is the believer's declaration of independence from God. That if we are not praying, we're saying, I got it, God. I don't need prayer for my life or ministry. I got this thing. You are clearing your declaration of independence from God. I can do this. So I want to close this morning with four thoughts that we just looked at. Four things I want to leave us with. Number one, cleansing of leprosy reveals that Jesus, the Son of Man, has power to deliver from the defilement of sin. Only Jesus and Jesus alone. Number two, the leper's approach God on God's terms. He came in desperation, in humility, requesting in faith for Jesus to cleanse him, and Jesus did. He came on God's terms, not his terms. Number three, some have good motives for disobeying God's commands, but it will always result in the hindering of God's plan. Always. Always. And fourthly, prayerlessness is the believer's declaration of independence from God. If we're not praying, what we are saying is, I have my life, I have my ministry, it's all under control. That's what we're declaring. I got this. Boy, that should scare us this morning. We're not praying, we've declared our independence from the Lord. Maybe this morning something that was said sort of hit a nerve. You know, you go to the doctor, and they're always poking around. It seems like they won't leave your mouth alone until they hurt you. You know, it's just like, oh, wow. You know, but it's almost like they tap, 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 you know, they find that spot. They first ask you, does any place in your mouth hurt? Yeah, just 27 teeth. No, you just go, I have this tooth that hurts back here. And they go back to, oh, is that the one? Yep, that's the one, you know. And they keep kind of tapping along, probing and looking, and they're looking for issues. They're looking for problems. And maybe this morning, God's touched on something, and you're going, ouch. I need to humble myself today. I need to beg God. I need to come in faith. I need to be honest. I'm in a desperate place. Maybe you haven't received Jesus Christ this morning, and it's now been brought to your realization. You don't have a relationship with him. You're not born again. You need to be born again. You just stay in that condition you're in. You're going to be lost forever. You just stay. You don't do nothing. Just stay where you're at, and you'll just go right into eternity without God. You'll be lost forever. You want to make a change this morning. You'll admit that you're desperate, and you'll admit that he is the Lord. You'll come to him in humility. You'll come to him in faith, and you'll come begging for God's mercy. God can touch you today. You can have an encounter with him today. There isn't a person outside of that. There's no untouchables here today. The only untouchables are those that don't want God's touch. That's your call.